Welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio West, your show for all things kayak fishing in Oregon, Washington, California, and beyond. Now, here's your host, Isaac the Nothing Miller.
Hey folks, this is Isaac the Nothing Miller. Welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio West, the only online broadcast and podcast dedicated to kayak fishing in Washington, Oregon, California, and the rest of the West Coast. Tonight, we have Bellingham, Washington based Rory O'Connor. Rory's been tearing it up this year. He's had some monster lean cod. He's picked up a nice big halibut that I'm still jealous about, and a lot more. Hey, Rory, how's it going?
Good. How you doing, Isaac?
Hey, not too bad. I managed to get out of the house and onto the water today for the first time in about a month. So that was
nice.
Just a little bit of trout fishing. Just a little trout fishing.
Good.
Little 12-inch trout right off the start, and that was the whole day right there, just the one. The wind ended up picking up and blowing me all over the place. So I called it good
really?
After.
Were you fly fishing?
I wasn't. No, I was gear fishing. You know, I was tempted to bring the fly rod along with me, but the I only have a 7-weight. And it's a little big for the trout, even a little too big for the bass at Hag Lake, too. So how about yourself? How's it going?
It's going really well. Actually, I'm thinking of heading out tomorrow with a friend out near a place called Deception Pass, which is in the San Juan Islands area. So forecast looks good, so hopefully we'll get some fish.
Right on. Now, I grew up in the Seattle area, so I'm pretty familiar with Deception Pass.
Oh, okay, so you're familiar with San Juan's, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'm especially familiar with Deception Pass, which can be quite the treacherous area. So careful out there.
I'm just going to the area. I'm not going to the pass itself. The pass itself, some people, you know, actually you see a lot of sea kayakers through there who really enjoy, like, the serious rips, but I don't.
I
go fishing, you know.
Exactly.
But it can be nuts down there. But I don't really get close to the pass itself.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I know the area pretty well. You know, the Puget
Sound.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous too.
Yeah, the Puget Sound itself is a great place to fish. I love fishing there because there's, I mean, any time of the year, everything's there. I mean, you've got sea run cutties, you know. Fly fishing for the sea run cutthroats, pretty much year round thing there.
Totally.
Salmon, you've got coho, chinook, many of which live out their whole lives in the sound and never venture out.
Yeah.
This is 2011. It's an odd number of years, so it's a humpy year. We got the humpbacks that are going to run through. The chum salmon, you know, granted they may not be, you know, the best salmon, which is why they're called chum. But still, for something almost as big as a chinook, they're great to fish for. I think they're all right. Oh. So, and then there's, of course, the ling cod. And, of course, you can't keep any rockfish out there anymore. But, I mean, there's always fish. Crabbing. Crabbing is pretty much always good, in my experience. So, what's your favorite?
Well, I'm primarily a rock fisherman, so I have salmon fished, but not with a huge amount of success. I'm hoping to do some more of that this year, especially since it's a pink year. But yeah, the Puget Sound, San Juan, I guess it's now called, like, the whole area is called the Salish Sea. Did you know that?
I did, actually. Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that was at a year or two ago they came up with that name, and I don't know what to think of that still.
I always assumed that, like, the entire area was called the Puget Sound, but as it turns out, I believe it's north of the Strait of Juan de Fuca is the San Juans, and then south is the Puget Sound. So I don't know. I just call it the Puget Sound. But San Juans, whatever works. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. But, and the probably the best thing about San Juans is there's really no swell. So, and especially in the San Juans, like, a lot of times even on windier days, the islands will kind of buffer the wind. So, and very often, it's just like a lake out there. I mean, it's just unbelievably, you know, easy to fish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really love it. I really, really love it.
Right. How long have you been fishing that area?
3 years now. I've lived here for 6 years, but I came from the Midwest, so I've always been a freshwater fisherman. So it took me a while to get up the gear and the nerve, I guess, to get out in the salt. And once I did, I still enjoy freshwater fishing, but I primarily target saltwater species.
Great, yeah. You know, for folks in the West Coast, there's no better introduction to saltwater fishing than places like the San Juans or San Francisco Bay, you know, good large saltwater estuaries like that where, you know, you can get in without having to worry about doing a surf launch. And, you know, given there's no major tides or major weather going on, it is as smooth as a lake most times.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, you know, the currents can be a lot trickier than they would be in the ocean, simply because it's going through oftentimes a, you know, very constricted zone. You know,
yeah.
You got to definitely be wary of that. But it's good times. Definitely good.
Great.
Times.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know I've been caught in some of those tidal rips a time or two myself, and actually that the first time, it was probably the third time I'd ever put my kayak on the water.
Of course, you have to have experiences like that, you know. It's just going to happen.
That's how you learn sometimes. And I did learn that day, and I learned that there is something to be said about a proper paddle stroke. Of course, you don't have to worry about that. You do pedal a Hobie, right?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I do.
That helps out quite a bit.
It does. It does. Although I was in a fairly precarious situation once off of Point Lawrence where the currents converged and there was a really big rip, standing waves, and I kind of got pulled into it, and I just wasn't paying attention. So I cranked down on the pedals, and one of the fins actually broke off. So,
that would be a problem.
So, oh yeah, it was pretty hair-raising. So I had to, you know, I feel like I just barely got out of there. But
I had to
paddle out of there. When you're in the big rip like that, it can be hard to paddle out because the pedals have a lot more thrust than you can get with a paddle. I'd probably paddlers would argue with me on that, but that's just my experience. But you're a Hobie person too, aren't you?
No, I have a ocean kayak.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a Trident 15.
That's a nice kayak.
Yeah, I love it. I've been fishing from it long enough now that most people have asked me why I haven't gone with a Hobie yet. Honestly, I don't know. It comes up, and I think about it every once in a while. But a Hobie would be nice, but that is not the next boat in my future. That's for sure.
Oh, what's the next boat?
I really want a Diablo paddle sports boat. They're Chupacabra. I don't know if you're familiar.
No, I'm not familiar with them.
They're made here in the U.S. They're made in Texas, and the Diablo paddle sports boats are great. They're very flat boats, very shallow draft. They're pretty wide. They're 36 inches wide, give or take. They are great river boats, you know, for some of our smaller rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stand-up fly fishing, not a problem. Boat
definitely.
That wide. And everything I've ever seen about those boats, I've liked. So that's something I'd love to get. But yeah, I tell you, you know, going back to the tide rips, man, I got caught I got caught in that one.
Oh, yeah, I interrupted your story. Sorry about that.
Yeah, oh, no problem. I was down south part of Puget Sound around Anderson Island, right across from the Nisqually. And I was just out coming around the south end of the island, and I was looking around. I'm like, okay, it's time for me to come around and, you know, head back to the cabin. And I looked over, and there was a piling out in the middle. I was like, there's a big wake behind that piling. Right there, that's the sign.
Yeah.
Well, I started making my turn. Like I said, I'm a 15-foot trident, which with the rudder on the back, it's actually 16 feet long.
Yeah.
And even with
yeah,
the rudder,
boat, yeah.
Yeah, by the time I managed to turn around to go back the opposite direction, I had traveled another half mile or more away from where I was going. It was a very long trip. I got some very good looks. I went in close to shore to get out of as much of it as possible.
Yeah.
But even still, you know, I was just sitting there. I was got to stare at some rocks for a long time because they weren't going anywhere.
That's pretty frustrating when you're cranking as hard as you can and
going nowhere.
Yeah.
I was sitting there looking at the cell phone thinking, am I going to have to call the wife and get a ride? You know, pretty serious. So,
yeah.
It was tough.
Well, as you know, a lot of times it can be easier, too, to go further out, which can be nerve-wracking. But
yeah, just to get out of it.
Sometimes those currents happen pretty close to shore, and, you know, it may be worthwhile just to go out. But I guess it just depends on the area you're in.
Yeah, in that situation, it probably would have. So I know you've done a lot of fishing in the Puget Sound. You've done a lot of fishing on the coast as well, where you're in that.
Yeah.
You know, how do those two differ in your mind? What types of things are different, and how do you change your approach?
Well, primarily being a rock fisherman, I don't really change the approach. It's just that the fishing is way better out there.
Okay.
I mean, the great thing about the Puget Sound is right in my backyard, but, like, you know, it's just going to be harder to mostly, I mean, the biggest barrier is the regulations. For, like you said, you can't keep rockfish ever, and the lingcod season is only 45 days. There is a halibut season. It's something like 2 weeks, but there's not that many people who catch halibut, you know, on any kind of craft in the Puget Sound, San Juans. So really, to get the big fish, you got to go out to the coast. As you know, living in Portland yourself, I mean, the fishing. Well, I guess you do sturgeon fishing, don't you?
Yeah, we've got sturgeon fishing right downtown.
Yeah, but
so.
you've got access to potentially huge fish right there.
Yes.
But for us, it's going out anywhere along the coast. A lot of people go to La Push. I go to Nia Bay because there's just so much fishable area out there. You have two places to hit. One is off of the beach, so you've got an ocean side, and then you've got around the corner is the straight side, the Strait of Juan de Fuca, where that begins. So if you've got a lot of weather, you can go on the straight side, and there's a little bit of a buffer from wind and swell. If they're assuming it's like a west wind or swell,
right.
And the fishing there is almost as good as the ocean side. So, yeah, I've been spending a lot of time out there and getting to know it really well, and going out there a lot with my friends Bryce Mullenkamp and Bill Liston, who are, as you know, part of the Northwest Kayak Anglers Club, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, northwestkayakanglers.com, and I think they have .org, too. Just to interrupt real quick, for anyone listening that's not familiar, Nia Bay, if you look at the map of Washington State, look for the very furthest, most northwest point in the state, right out on the peninsula, and that right at the very end right there is Nia Bay. I've been there a couple of times in my life, and that's the halibut fishing I did when I was a kid was all down at, out of Nia Bay.
We always
fished the ocean side coming out.
Yeah.
We always went out on a good-sized charter boat, so
Okay, so you probably did pretty well then.
Always did very well out there, so no complaints.
Yeah.
I love the Nia Bay fishing. Of course, I haven't been there in close to 15 years, so I'm sure a lot has changed in that town.
Yeah. It's the Macaw Indian Reservation, and it's actually mm-hmm. set up really well for fishing, and the people there are super cool. And it's also beautiful, too. I mean, I could go hang out there. I can't imagine being in there not fishing, but there's so much to do outside of fishing there. It's an amazing place. I think it's a gem. It's paradise. In the fishing, like, just you can launch off the beach, and the fishing starts right off the beach. It's not like you have a commute or anything.
That is nice.
Yeah, and even on the straight side, there's fishing so close, and multiple places to launch, from CQ all the way west to Nia Bay around the corner. Cape Flattery is the northwesternmost point, and mm-hmm. then all the way down we'll push. I mean, it's just, there's an amazing amount of fish there, and Bryce, who Bryce Mullenkamp, who is a really good salmon fisherman. Fishes out there for salmon and does really well. So, the biggest barrier to the reason why I think the fishing is so good there is because it just doesn't get that much pressure because it's so far away.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like it's a good 5 hours from Seattle, and for me, it takes me maybe a little longer than that. And it's very remote. So, I mean, that's going to exclude a lot of people right there.
Yeah, I do remember that quite a bit. That drive seems to just go on and on and on. There's some great scenery and all.
Oh, yeah.
But there definitely comes to a point, especially when you're a teenager, that scenery just isn't cutting it anymore, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, you want to get there and fish. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's great. I love it.
Right on. Yeah, I'm actually looking at a map right now of Nia Bay. It's been it's been a long time since I've been there, so I just had to get another look at things and getting an idea of where we were when I was in the charter boats doing our fishing. And
probably you went up the Swiftshire, which is it's an area of there's a lot of reefs up there. I think it's probably like 12 or 15 miles out, right on the boundary of Canada and the U.S. It's really productive for most bottom fish and lingcod or halibut. But I think that's where most of the charter boats head out. In fact, that's where most power boats head out to do the halibut fishing. So
I know
a little out of range for kayak.
And a little bit for a kayak. And I know crossing the bar, even on a power boat, getting through the strait can be pretty sketchy at times. I've seen when there's been some big swells going there.
Yeah, you've got direct exposure there. So it can be tricky.
So tell me more about kayak fishing in Nia Bay. Like I said, all my experience there has been from a powerboat. What are you guys doing on the kayaks?
Yeah, it's the greatest thing ever is the Fishin' Map, which are you familiar with that brand of maps?
Mm-hmm.
They show the depth contours really well, and they have points marked out where, you know, I don't know where they get their information, but I guess just from you know, accumulating it through experience.
Yeah, you're talking about the...
They mark out the best fishing spots. And then there's also little indicators to show you what the makeup of the bottom is. So it can be sandy, gravel, or rocky.
Yeah, just to interrupt real quick. Are you talking about the Navionics fishing maps?
No,
it's
like a, wait, I think it is called, F-I-S-H-N apostrophe map. And it's just like this plastic waterproof map that you get at.
Okay.
Maybe it's only Washington State. I don't know if they do Oregon. But it's just the greatest thing ever. And it's really detailed. I'd say more detailed than the Navionics iPhone app. I mean, the only downside is that you can't obviously plot your exact position on the map itself, but you can use that your charting app for that. Yeah, it just gives you a good idea of where to hit. And, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I prefer to fish off of the beach on the ocean side, but as you know, the big blue doesn't always cooperate, even when it's forecasted to. Or you'll be out there in the morning and just get blown off the water. So I'll oftentimes go on the straight side and fishing just as good. So kayak fishing out there, I mean, it's fairly challenging. I would say, you know, I've gone out there by myself, but I certainly wouldn't recommend it. Because especially when you're going off the beach, you may very well be the only person out there because the power boats have to come around from the bay, and that would be to get to where you are is about a 14-mile trip. So there's very few power boats that you'll see off of the beach side where the beach launch is.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's always safer to go with somebody.
Absolutely. Now, where's this beach at that you're launching from? That's the thing that gets me. The only thing I know. I'm sorry?
It's called Hobuck. It's pretty much the only beach that is accessible on the Macaw Reservation.
Okay.
And there's a campground there. It's pretty nice set up. So
that's not so bad then.
Stay there. A lot of powerboaters will stay there, but they'll drag their boats all the way back down in the bay and launch from the harbor there. Whereas for kayakers, it's ideal because you just drive up, set up your camp, and drag your kayak down to the beach. I mean, it's amazing. And the beach launch is the bay itself kind of hooks around on the north side. So if you got a west or northwest swell, there's a small kind of natural breakwater there that you know really helps with the beach launch. So it's
nice.
It's great. It's great for kayaking. And then once you get out past that breakwater, it's just like you can get into some big fish. And the whole area, it's like miles and miles of, you know, gravel, rocky, occasional intermittent sand, but not that much until you get further out. I mean, you can drop in anywhere pretty much and catch fish. So it's like a wonderland for kayak fishing there.
Right on. That
and
does
like
sound
said,
pretty nice.
Powerboats because it's too far, it's too long for them to get there. So
that's it's all day just to get around that point sometimes. So
Totally. Yeah, the current's going against you for sure.
Yeah. So, like we hinted at earlier, you picked up a 45-pound halibut.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I was like, this is my first year halibut fishing. So like,
your first halibut? I still remember my first halibut.
I've caught some halibut before from powerboat, but this is my first time targeting them from the kayak.
Gotcha.
And I really got to thank Bryce Mullenkamp, who the weekend I caught the fish was going to come out with us, but he got sick. And he actually did a lot of the research and got a lot of the intel that I used and subsequently got the fish. So hats off to him and also to Bill Liston, who was out there with me that weekend and brought the bait that I used. So it certainly wouldn't have been possible without those guys. He works at a fish distributor, a fish wholesaler in Seattle, and brought some salmon bellies, some wild coho salmon bellies, which were, you know, really, they're, I guess, halibut just love them. They're really high in oil content. And, I mean, I definitely couldn't have done it without Bill. So, but I think it was, I mean, I was just in the right place at the right time. There's like a huge amount of luck as well, because kayak isn't the ideal vessel for catching halibut, because the halibut, as you know, they inhabit large sandy or gravelly bottomed areas.
Right.
And you have a general idea, and again, I'm still a new, I've caught halibut before, but I wouldn't say I'm an expert at catching them. But there's a lot of places where they could be, and there's vast stretches where, you know, it's possible, but you just can't cover that amount of water on a kayak, you know, which
right.
is why, you know, you just don't see too many kayak fishermen targeting halibut, except of course, Howard McKim, who formerly held the record for largest fish.
The biggest fish, yep.
Caught from a kayak, which was, coincidentally, halibut.
Yep, 187 pounds. Yeah,
187. He definitely knows what he's doing. In fact, he was a big help, too. He and Bryce talked about gear and rigging, and I used a rig that he and Howard had talked about. So, Bill and I, we ventured out pretty far because you want to be in somewhat deeper water to get the halibut. And while there's a lot of structure for bottom fish around the ocean side of Nia Bay, there's not a ton of deep water. Like, you've got to go out a few miles to get to 200 plus feet deep. So
yeah.
We were actually, I think at the end of the day, we were 5 miles out, which is the farthest that I've ever been offshore on the ocean. And I certainly wouldn't have done it by myself, and I wouldn't have done it if there weren't a good number of boats, because the halibut season in Marine Area 4, which is Nia Bay, is only scheduled. There's only 4 days a year when it's open. So,
there was
a lot of
pressure company.
On those days. What's that?
So there's a lot of company, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we were okay with going out that far simply because there was a lot of potential help around if we needed it. And it was a slow day, too. I should mention that I had fished that was my third day halibut fishing, and the first two were just completely fruitless. But, you know, fishermen are the ultimate optimists.
Yeah.
Let's just keep trying and trying. So we kept trying and trying. So on the third day I got one, and they ended up opening up the season because the quota wasn't met again last weekend. We went out again and didn't get anything. So, yeah, we'll keep trying. But I think it was equal parts the help I had and a lot of pedaling and paddling and a lot of luck.
A lot of right place, right time, stars aligned.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. But it was doubly lucky because even the powerboats who were flying around all the different hotspots weren't really getting much that day. In fact, I ran into a friend of mine when we were out there who had been fishing that same spot for a couple hours and weren't getting anything. And we get out there, and he's like, I think we're going to try somewhere else. 10 minutes later, I dropped in the very same spot he had been fishing and hooked up. So it was just very lucky. And, man, I'll tell you, the halibut tastes good.
I bet it does.
Yeah, it's the taste of victory. And, you know, halibut's just tasty.
Right on.
But, yeah, it was a blast. It was a blast.
Cool.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you hinted a little bit about the gear. What, anything special in that lineup that you went after? Or?
I went after the maximalist Christmas tree approach. Like, you can only use two hooks, but
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of other things that you can do to attract. I had a trophy torch on, which is it's an underwater light that illuminates the rig underneath. I rigged it up above my I had a dropper, which had a hook on it, and on that hook I had a herring, a giant horse herring. And then below that, I ran a skirt, a glow skirt with a salmon belly on it.
Nice, okay.
So, yeah, there was a lot going on.
Nice big reel, I'm sure.
Yeah, I use the Shimano Takoda. I think it's 500, pretty big reel. Really, I have a very stout rod, which I get made fun of because it's Bryce calls it the meat stick.
The big old piece of rebar?
Yeah, I mean, it's made for catching huge fish. And,
there you go.
And it does a great job at that. So it's
okay.
And I find it important to be able to swing that rod around the front of the kayak when there's a fish on. You know, because if the current or the fish is pulling the opposite way and you can't get that rod around to the other side, you know, sometimes you need to do it in a hurry. You don't have time to steer the rudder. So I like to be able to swing it around in an instant. So it's actually an 8-foot rod, and I've never seen anything like it. It's just,
wow,
just an amazing rod. And it really did the trick. I was running 65-pound braid, 50-pound sort of safety line on which I ran a sliding sinker, and then there was actually 400-pound mono with the rig on it. So that nothing could chew through it, or, you know. So that
good
wasn't
stuff.
Really, yeah.
See, I think I only use about 150 to 200 pounds, but 400, 600, that would work too. Not a problem.
Yeah. Do you crimp or do you tie?
Crimp.
150, you crimp.
Yeah. Crimping. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything over 80-pound mono should be crimped, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's just a lot easier to deal with. So.
Yeah. It's crimping's very easy to deal with. And I haven't had any problems. I've heard some horror stories of people who had crimps open up on them. I haven't, even when I've, you know, had really bad hook or snags and managed to get it off, never had a problem with it, even looking like it was going to open up. So.
Yep.
So we'll do it again. Now, you have a pretty generous halibut season down there in Oregon, don't you?
We do. We've got especially this year. This year, they really went extremely nice on us for fishing. Haven't made it out there to do any halibut fishing yet. But right now, yeah, all areas are open. On the entire Oregon coast out to the 3-mile line. So anything inside of 3 miles, or no, it's inside of, what is it, 40 fathoms. So within 240 feet, which generally that's 3 miles out in general.
Oh, okay.
On the Oregon coast. So anything inside of 240 feet opens 7 days a week right now.
Great.
Then to go beyond that, to get out into the, you know, deeper water, that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday until the quota's met. So.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't heard that it's been met yet, and I haven't looked. The thing that's nice fishing inside of 240 feet is, besides the fact you don't have to paddle as far, you can keep whatever you catch. You're still limited to one halibut, but you can still catch other bottom fish. You can still catch a full limit of lingcod. You can still catch a full limit of rockfish and the halibut. Whereas if you go out beyond 240 feet, on the all water days, it's halibut only. If you're out on a powerboat with a few other guys and one guy catches a halibut, you can't stop on the way back in for the other two. If there's a halibut on the boat, that's all that can be on there. So
yeah,
and that's the only thing that's really
a limit of one per fisherman.
Yeah, it's one fish per day per angler, and then five a year. So it's not a bad deal either.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's kind of a strange rule, though, because I mean, it seems like, I mean, let's say, for example, you were out there fishing more than 40 fathoms and someone gets a giant lingcod, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I would imagine you'd retain it. But then, say, someone catches a halibut, I mean, you're almost incentivizing people to dump the lingcod, you know?
Pretty much, yeah. And that's the tough part. And the other thing that's really tough is I know, you know, there's a lot of canaries out there when you get out that deep, you know, and you got the yellow eyes, and I know, and all the other rockfish for that matter, you know, we've got, 14 different species of rockfish or something like that. I don't know how many. We got a lot. Fish are coming up from that depth, and I know most of these guys don't have vent tools either.
Yeah.
You know, these are fish that are just tossed off the hook and feeding seagulls at that point.
Right, right.
You know, so with the Oregon Rockfish Classic coming up in a couple of weeks, you know, one of the number one items on my shopping list is going to be a vent tool. Just because, you know, I've been at one point this year, I needed it and I didn't have it. And, you know, I tried various other methods to get the fish down to the bottom, you know, doing the, you know, upside down hook through the jaw with the pinch barb and stuff like that. And it didn't work. So, So I felt bad for that.
Yeah.
It was just, it's kind of a waste.
Yeah, it is kind of
I don't like to be that way.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, I do some fishing in Florida, and by law, if you're going to fish on a reef, you have to have a vent tool on board. And know how to use it. Obviously, that knowing how to use it is hard to enforce. But,
Right.
I thought that was interesting. Whereas here, I don't know, maybe the regulatory agencies think that A, people won't use it properly, or B, this is a different type of fish than they would have, a reef fish than they would have on the East Coast, and they can be damaged with a vent tool. But, I mean, the alternative is they just become floaters. I mean,
So
it seems like something is better than nothing.
Yeah. You know, the fish that this happened to me this year was a gorgeous. It was only, 12 inches. It was a gorgeous copper rockfish.
Oh, really?
And it's just like, and I spent over a half hour trying to figure out ways to get that fish down.
Yeah.
And of course, if I had a vent tool, it wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah.
Right then and there,
exactly.
Would have taken care of the situation. And, down in Oregon, Fish and Wildlife, they do suggest having a vent tool. I think the reg book, they suggest it. I think the reg book, if I remember correctly, actually has a little how to vent fish properly.
Oh, excellent.
Which is really cool. But they don't go any further than that. They do suggest it. They don't require it. And there's no secret that the rock fishery on the Oregon coast is pretty sensitive to overfishing and improper fishing. So, I would like to think that they would, really push a lot harder for, proper care of fish that being returned to the water. But it doesn't always happen that way. But speaking of the Rockfish Classic, you going to be there this year?
I will be there. How about yourself?
Awesome. I will. Looking forward to it. So
it should be good.
Good
Let's
times.
Hope that we have some good weather like last year.
Like last year. Yeah, that was great weather last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't remember. No, there was some rain at night. Wasn't so bad.
Yeah,
I remember.
I think, what was, sunny the day. I think it got some sun the day.
Yeah, we got some sun on the water. I was the first person out, and there was a little bit of rain. There was a little bit of rain at about 5:30 in the morning, and by 6 o'clock it was bright, sunny, and nice. So.
Yeah. Oh, I love it out there, Depot Bay. That is some good fishing.
It's great fishing. And there's no secrets on fishing Depot Bay. Everyone knows how to fish Depot Bay. So it's all over the internet.
Yeah, just vast amounts of like huge tracts of fishable territory, miles and miles, just dropping in anywhere and catching fish.
Yep. So it should be a good time. We got the fish fry going on again this year.
Yeah.
So I think the after party is just as fun as the fishing. So we'll be good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's great to hang out with all the people that are on the NWKA boards that you correspond with almost on a daily basis. Good to get together with them and hang out, trade some fish stories.
Poke fun at each other, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit of that. So I know you do some freshwater fishing too. Where do you like to do most of that at?
I don't do too much of it anymore, but I used to go more to, there's a big lake around here, Lake Whatcom, that has smallmouth bass, and it has trout and kokanee.
Okay.
So I used to fish there more, but, and then there's Lake Samish, too, which is a year-round lake.
Yes.
I haven't had great luck there. But, yeah, I'm hoping to get more river fishing in this year. One of my really good friends is an expert river fisherman, so I would like to explore more rivers because there's certainly plenty of that.
A lot of steelhead up there.
You're a river fisherman yourself. Would you say, do you spend most of your fishing time on rivers, or do you mix it up?
Hard to say on there. Here in Portland, we're surrounded by rivers. You know, like I said, I grew up in Seattle where you're surrounded by lakes. There's rivers too, but, you know, where I lived, there were lakes everywhere. I fish probably two or three lakes around here throughout the year. The Willamette and Columbia Rivers, part of the Clackamas, pretty much year-round. You know, because there's always something there. There's always either sturgeon or salmon or bass, so that walleye even. So there's always that. And then any opportunity for me to get out on the coast, I will. So it's probably close to split it up into thirds, and that's pretty much what it is. It's pretty close to that. So
that's good. How is the how's the sturgeon fishing been?
The sturgeon fish, well, the tough part right now is we still have the Columbia River at flood stage.
Oh, yeah.
And it has been for over a week now, and no sign of it slowing down anytime soon. Granted, the rains have stopped, but now the weather's warmed up, and now we have snow melt. That said, we have a shad run every year, and the shad are starting to show up. And nothing like shad more than big sturgeon.
Oh, really?
Yes. So they are here. They're showing up. I know plenty of big fish, and by big fish I mean upwards of 8 foot being caught right now.
Wow.
And the bigger ones be here any day now. So I will actually be turning my attention to those here shortly. So I got a good buddy of mine down here, Marvin of Marvin's Guide Service. He's going to hook up with me. He'll be sitting in his boat. I'll be sitting in my kayak, and we're shooting to find something 10 foot or bigger to put on the kayak. So, and he'll be my chase boat. Yeah. He's going to be my chase boat for the whole thing, just because I don't want to end up down in Longview, Washington,
Getting
to paddle back to Portland.
I'll imagine you'll get towed.
So, yep, that's my big plan.
Man, that's some big game.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
That's exciting.
Something we've been talking about for a few months. We got a good spot, and the fish are starting to show up. So coming soon.
And are you baiting with shad then?
Yeah. Yeah. The sturgeon have learned that the shad are good eating. And shad are, you know, they're a non-native species that rolls through this time of year. And they come through thick. And they're, you know, they're not huge fish, but you're, you know, 2 pounds. 2 pound little fish, but they're a hoot on light tackles. Fishing for those on their own is fun. And there's no limit on them. So you can spend all day out there. Oh, yeah.
What do they take? I mean, what do you get them on?
Really small. They probably have them at the stores up there, what's called shad darts. They're actually pretty much crappie jigs. Just itty bitty little crappie jigs, essentially.
With a lead head on it, or what does it look like?
Yeah, it's a painted lead head. You know, only 1/8, maybe, you know, of an ounce at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And you can run 2 or 3 hooks on a drop and just sit up in 15 to 20 foot of water. Actually, one of the killer rigs on the Willamette River is just a brass swivel with a hook on the end.
No, seriously, wow.
That's it. Just a brass swivel with a hook. And that's, you know, just a number 2 hook. Just a little, just, that's it. You know, put a little bit of lead to get it down and you're good to go. And the shad, what's nice, like I said, the sturgeon have learned that the shad are good eating. Shad's also killer bait for halibut and crabbing. So.
Oh, really? Nice.
Because it's another one of those nice oily fish, just like the salmon bellies. It's great for anything that's going to take bait. Can't go wrong. And like I said, they're a hoot on light tackle. So even fishing for the shad is fun. You know, especially when you're catching 40 a day.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. So, now, when you're fishing for the shad with such light tackle, has the current become a problem?
It does, which, you know, you're going to be sitting on anchor, which helps that quite a bit. And you're going to run, you know, you're going to run a couple ounces of lead. You don't need to worry about things too much. You don't need to necessarily hold bottom like you would if you're bait fishing for sturgeon or catfish, or for that matter. But just enough to get you down to the bottom is all you really need. And it's okay in my mind if it drifts around a little bit, because you're, you know, keeping in within the fish zone. So,
yeah.
It works out pretty well.
Are snags a big issue there or no?
Like snag in the river? Not so much. Yeah, you know, I've not had that happen.
Good.
Yeah, most of the bottoms around here are going to be sandy, especially if you're going to be out shad fishing. You're looking for a sandy bottom. Same thing with, you know, salmon fishing for that matter. So there's snags. Whatever's drifting down the river, if there's anything, you're not going to snag up at the bottom. So, and if you're snagging up at the bottom, you're in a rocky area. That's not where you want to be fishing anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So, and what's a lot of fun, it never happened to me, but I have heard stories of catching sturgeon while you're shad fishing. So here you are using a
six and a half foot trout rod.
There you go. Yeah, you're using a six and a half foot trout rod, and all of a sudden here comes big sturgeon. Same thing can happen. It could be steelhead even sometimes. You'll hook up a steelhead running through. Just get the right flash on there, and it catches their eyes. So sometimes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, how big is your how heavy is your anchor when you're anchoring in the river there?
I use an 8 to 12 pound anchor here.
Oh wow!
A lot heavier than most people ever talk about, especially when you're kayak fishing. Everyone's talking 3 pound anchors. No, I use a 12, especially when the flows are up and moving. With the Columbia the way it is right now, I know I can hold anchor with a 12-pound anchor. I might not be able to paddle upstream very well, but I can hold. And there's been times sturgeon fishing in the winter where in the Willamette where I've needed that much weight just to hold bottom. You know, when the river's moving 80,000 cubic feet per minute or more. You know, the Columbia right now is about 500,000. I haven't even looked at the Willamette right now just because I know how high the Columbia is. So,
yeah.
But yeah, there's, you know, I went through a lot of anchors a couple years ago when I started first anchoring up the kayak. In the summer, not so much. In the summer, you know, a 3-pound anchor would hold you just fine. But come the fall months, you know, boom, I lost that 3-pound. Okay, well, let me try a 5-pound. Boom, lost that five. You know, went to an 8-pound. Okay, this is holding me. Oh, there, we slipped a little bit. We're all right. It was kind of sketchy. It kind of worked. But, you know, now I run the 12-pound a lot of during the fall and winter months, especially spring as well, where it's definitely going with that 12-pounder. But, you know, summer months I can drop back down to lighter weights. Not a big deal.
How deep is it? Like how far do you have to haul up that 12-pound anchor?
That all depends on where you're fishing.
Yeah, I suppose.
Anywhere 75 feet. There's a couple of holes that I fish at. Yeah. There's a couple of spots I fish at where it's 120 feet deep. But there's a good shelf up above there where I only have to drop the anchor about 60 feet. So I don't have, and then I can just drift back a little bit till I'm over the hole to go fishing. So that definitely helps. But it can be a shelf.
Do you run like an anchor trolley then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have an anchor trolley. I run, I use a wind up electrical cord spool. And then I use a crab buoy and a boat bumper to help keep that floating.
Oh, okay.
So.
And then you release that when you get a fish on, is that right?
Most of the time, yeah. Oh, it depends.
Yeah.
You know.
Depends on how big the fish. Yeah.
If there's a
how
big.
What's the mechanism for releasing it?
I just use a jam cleat.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
You know, the Trident 15's got the rudder on it, and the rudder itself has a jam cleat for whatever reason, I'm not sure. I never figured out why it has a jam cleat, but it's supposed to keep the rudder from raising when you don't want it to, which
right.
I don't know how that's supposed to happen. So I just use that for the anchor trolley. Works just fine. It was already there. So.
Excellent.
There have been times where I've had that slip. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Like in a fast current?
Yeah, it was a fast current. And, you know, the anchor was holding just fine, but I was ended up, you know, checking. Or I had the rope for the anchor through the cleat, and then I also had a quick release knot tied in onto my handle as well. So just as a backup.
Huh.
But,
so how do you travel to these, like, you know, assuming there's pretty healthy current there, how do you travel to these spots? Is it difficult?
No, because a lot of times there's a kayak accessible launch point within a half mile.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
So, yeah, there's not a huge, huge distance to cover.
Yeah.
Which definitely makes things. Actually, I think I got to think of all my sturgeon spots. One of them's as close as just 100 yards of paddling.
Nice. Yeah.
A couple of them are a half mile. One of them might actually be a mile upstream paddle. And if it's going to be that difficult, I'll go to one of the other spots and not have to worry about, you know, pushing the limits too hard on getting to the spot. So,
right.
You know, and the current's not always that serious. Just when things are pushing flood stage after heavy rains, that type of thing. We have, you know, all the rivers down here are tidally influenced. So
yeah.
you catch the Willamette on a day where you're fishing in an incoming tide and there's a 5-mile-an-hour breeze from the north, you don't even need an anchor. You're not going anywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The last time I was down salmon fishing on the Willamette, there was a breeze out of the north, 10 to 15 miles an hour. And I had a paddle to go downstream, but not upstream. It was just enough to push me back upstream. At trolling speed, nonetheless. Even better.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a dream day. It doesn't happen all that often, but it does happen.
Yeah, you guys have access to a lot of good fishing down there. That's excellent. Rivers and lakes and, of course, the ocean.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah. Same thing up there. We got some pretty world-renowned steelhead rivers up there. Some great...
Yeah, another thing I'd like to get into, for sure.
Yeah. You know, and you got the San Juans, beautiful scenery, great fishing, and
yep.
And all of that as well. And, of course, you also have Lake Washington, which
yep.
has everything in the world is in that lake.
Yep. I've never fished it. I imagine you've fished it since you grew up in Seattle.
It's been a long time, but, yeah, I have fished it. You know, it's a good time for you to start fishing it, though. I hear Cabela's. Have you heard about the Cabela's $1 million fish contest? Or not
no,
really,
I have not.
But a competition. Cabela's, somewhere in the United States, Cabela's has released a tagged fish worth $1 million.
Oh, yeah? Like, it's in some lake?
It's in, yeah. My understanding is there are many tagged fish, and all the tags are worth, you know, whatever prizes, and there's one fish that is worth $1 million. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Lake Washington is on their list of lakes.
Oh, okay. So they have a list. So, okay.
Yep, they have a list of lakes. Lake Washington is on there. I know Hag Lake here in Oregon, which is where I was today, they're on the list as trying to think, who else do we have? Detroit Lake here in Oregon. Also in Washington is Potholes Reservoir out on the eastern Washington. Great fishing there too, by the way. Sprague Lake also in eastern Washington. And American Lake, which is outside Tacoma by Fort Lewis.
Okay.
And
they don't say what species it is. I mean, it could be a trout or a bass.
Yeah, exactly. They don't say what species. You know, Washington, I don't know. I have no idea what to even start looking at in those lakes. Oregon, I have a feeling Hag Lake's going to be a bass. Probably a smallmouth bass. It does have large and smallies. But the last two state record smallmouth bass came out of Hag Lake, which is one of the reasons why I think that's where what they have going on there. Detroit Lake in Oregon, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a trout. So again, hard to say. There's a lot of things there too.
So what if you're a catch and release angler? I mean, do you pull the tag off? I mean, how do you?
Yeah, and they have instructions on their website. But yeah, you.
Oh, okay.
Can take photos of the fish and remove the tag, and then you know just claim the tag. That's
it.
Yeah. Not a bad deal.
Funny. Well, I hope whoever catches it knows that that the fish is worth $1 million. You know, it'd be hilarious if they like take a picture of it.
So look at this.
And if someone was like, hey, that fish is worth $1 million.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's about time to wrap it up for the night, Rory. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Great, Great time. Would love to have you back in the future.
Yeah, let's do it again.
You bet. So if anybody was looking for you on the interwebs, is there any place they can find you? Any websites to shout out for you?
Let's see. I need to start a fishing-related blog. I know you have one. I've been meaning to do that.
I know you're on NorthwestKayakAnglers.com.
Yeah, that's probably the best place. I'm the tall man on Northwest Kayak Anglers, or you can look me up on Facebook, Rory O'Connor.
And you are the tall man. I have. You are up there in height.
Yeah, and so. I didn't realize that Bryce Mullenkamp, one of the founders of NWKA, was actually just a little bit taller than me. So.
Yeah. Not by much, I don't think.
No, he's 6'7". I'm just a hair under 6'7". So
there you go. And, of course, this is Kayak Fishing Radio. You can find us, kayakfishingradio.com, Kayak Fishing Radio on Facebook, and on Twitter, it's kayakfish, the letter N, radio.com. Not enough characters to get the I and the G in there. Vanna wouldn't sell us a vowel, and we ran out of letters for the G, so that's how that worked. My blog is isaac-online.com. It's one S, two A's. And that's the show for tonight. Rory, thanks again for being on the show. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Yep.
Awesome.
See you at ORC.
Sounds good. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Take care.